Welcome to Straight Talk on Health. I'm your host, Dr. Chet Zelasko. Straight Talk on Health is a joint production with WGVU in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I examine the world of health, whether it's research that makes the news, another miracle diet, or a new food fad. I look at the science behind them and let you know whether it's real or not. You can check out the other things that I do on my website, drchet.com, and please sign up for my free emails. I have to tell you, I've gotten more emails about the artificial sweetener sucralose than I ever have before. I haven't seen more commentaries on sucralose in the health news feeds that I have in that same time frame. Everybody seems to be talking about sucralose. The problem is that the issue really isn't the sweetener itself. It is a contaminant that may be found in the sweetener called sucralose 6-acetate. On top of all that, the primary author of the study is continually muddying the results of the study by using the term sucralose when they actually are talking about sucralose 6-acetate. To begin with, the sweetener sucralose is as safe as it always has been. Some people are opposed to artificial sweeteners of all types, and that's fine. But there's nothing in this research update nor any of the other studies on sucralose that presents any type of major concern. Doesn't mean it's for everybody. There are genetic components and microbiome issues that may impact some people. But that aside, there's nothing to be fearful of, so let's check out the study that's attracting so much attention. And let's start with the premise the researchers claimed to have. They attempted to examine 6 historical claims about sucralose. So let's review those. Sucralose passes through the gut unchanged. Sucralose has no effect on the microbiome. Sucralose has no effect on the intestinal tract. Sucralose does not accumulate in human tissue. Sucralose has no effect on metabolism, including glucose or insulin. And finally, glucose will not disrupt the DNA, and thrown in just for fun, it is actually heat stable. To be blunt, they didn't actually test the last one about heat stability. There is concern that at high temperatures in cooking, sucralose may not be appropriate. And certainly you don't find many products like that. But you do find a lot of things in drinks, and you do find it in a lot of baked products. So being at that 300, 375 degrees is probably just going to be the right temperature range. Now, to say the tests to examine these questions were complicated is an understatement. From the time they did the original testing on whether sucralose was safe to enter the food supply 35 years ago, it has been generally regarded as safe. That's a GRAS recognition. The technology in those 35 years has increased thousands of fold to be able to answer very specific questions on very minute amounts of chemicals. What concerned me the most is that the tests used did not actually measure the impact of sucralose 6-acetate on genes and the microbiome. They used algorithms to assess the potential for damage, not necessarily the actual damage. As I said, this paper was about a contaminant that may be found in commercially available sucralose that is used in drinks and baking products called sucralose 6-acetate. If you remember that I stated that the tests were complicated, I'm going to give you the results of the 8 tests in as simple fashion as possible. As I willingly admit, these types of tests are beyond my area of expertise. However, I use the author's own interpretation of the results from the paper, whether they could interpret the test or the results that were explained to them. These are their conclusions from the results section. The first test assessed the potential for altering DNA. The results indicated that sucralose 6-acetate was genotoxic, but sucralose itself was not. The second test assessed the potential for DNA damage in specific types of cells called TK6 cells. The results for sucralose 6-acetate were that it was genotoxic. They did not test sucralose, but prior studies demonstrated that it did not damage DNA in these types of cells. The third test also assessed the potential for causing damage to DNA. The results for sucralose-6 acetate was somewhat positive that it did have an impact, while the results for sucralose did not. The fourth test assessed mutations in bacteria. This is a typical test to test safety. Neither sucralose-6 acetate nor sucralose induced any mutations. The fifth test assessed electrical resistance and permeability in colon epithelial cells. Both sucralose and sucralose-6 acetate did affect monolayers, that single cell, of colon cells grown in test tubes. The sixth test attempted to examine the same type of colon cells for damage to RNA sequencing. A total of 12,553 genes were analyzed. There were changes with sucralose-6 acetate, but in no specific pattern. In other words, in that we don't know what many of those genes do, we don't know whether this is impactful or not. As for sucralose versus the control group, only two genes out of the over 12,000 tested seem to have some sort of variation in them. The seventh test examined microsome stability from liver cells from a variety of animals, including humans. There did seem to be some impact of both chemicals on this single layer of cells. The eighth test looked at the inhibition of cytochrome P450 detoxification enzymes in human liver cells. Sucralose-6 acetate did seem to impact two of the detox genes, while sucralose itself had no impact. So what do these results mean in the real world? It's difficult to say. You see, our bodies are not just single layers of cells. When the body makes a mistake in DNA, that mistake is addressed and the biochemicals are recycled before any mutation becomes permanent. When you do bench studies, there is no entire defense mechanism present. We have no idea how the body handles it within the body. Testing cells is not testing living organisms. The major question that I had related to the chemicals used in the testing. They contracted with chemical companies to have sucralose-6 acetate made to a standard level of 0.3% purity. Neither of those are commercially available. You know the little yellow packets that you can find in stores and in restaurants? Those are primarily fillers, dextrose and maltodextrone. Because the sucralose used is so sweet, only a very tiny amount is required. Why wouldn't you use the commercially available product, test that for impurities, because that's closer to what people will actually be using to sweeten drinks and in cooking? As I said before, not everyone can use artificial sweeteners like sucralose due to pre-existing genetic mutations and compromised microbiomes. Having said that, I don't see that this research has brought us forward about the actual sweetener used by human beings in their everyday lives, because the testing was actually about a contaminant, not the sweetener itself. What we do have is 35 years experience with sucralose as a sweetener. To date, there have been no large-scale studies that have raised any question about its impact on the health of humans. When there is more to know, I'll be sure to keep you informed. Until next time, this is Dr. Chet Zelasko saying, health is a choice, people. Choose wisely today and every day.
Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Chet Zelasko is recorded in the studios of WGVU in Grand Rapids, Michigan. The views and opinions expressed are not necessarily those of WGVU or its underwriters. Episodes are at wgvunews.org and wherever you get your podcasts.